Following is a recording of the Randy Davis teleconference with the American Nurse Association at 3 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of the presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given if you would like to ask a question. Please note, only those who are employed by a news organization are allowed to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Randy Davis. Mr. Davis, please begin.
Good afternoon, everybody. Sorry for the short notice, but a very serious decision has been made by Montgomery County's Fraternal Order of Police, only after a great deal of deliberation. This afternoon, approximately 30 minutes ago, the attorney for the Fraternal Order of Police, Martha Handman, H-A-N-D-M-A-N, filed a lawsuit in the circuit court for Montgomery County, Maryland. The plaintiff in the lawsuit is the Montgomery County Fraternal Order of Police, County Lodge 35, and two individual police officers, Michael Kane, K-A-N-E, and Mario Mastroangelo. We will be sending a copy of this complaint to anyone interested, and we will give you the email address to email your request to, or you can find it online on our website. You'll get information on that after this call. I'll very briefly describe the case, and then I'll turn very briefly the call over to Detective Tori Cook, who is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. This lawsuit names as defendant Montgomery County, Maryland government, the county executive Isaiah Leggett, and Patrick Lacefield in his capacity as director of the Montgomery County, Maryland Office of Public Information. The allegations in this complaint, and they are just allegations that remain to be proven, is that the Montgomery County government, and specifically County Executive Leggett and Patrick Lacefield, have injured the Fraternal Order of Police and at least two representative police officers, and therefore all police officers, by using public taxpayer funds to campaign and engage in political activities, and in doing so have violated several laws of the state of Maryland. The first law that is alleged to have been violated is Maryland Election Law 13-202 and 13-101, parenthesis little f. That law, according to the state prosecutor in a letter written to the county executive, forbids all solicitations and expenditures of funds to support or oppose a ballot question at an election unless those expenditures and solicitations are done through a ballot issue committee registered with the State Board of Elections. That is the determination made by the state prosecutor as to the meaning of those two Maryland code sections. We allege in the complaint, I'm acting as a spokesman for Ms. Handman. Ms. Handman alleges in the complaint that the county expenditure of taxpayer funds to advocate in favor of question B has not been done through a ballot committee registered with the State Board of Elections, and therefore, we allege, the county's expenditure and Mr. Leggett's, as county executive, authorization of those expenditures, and Mr. Lacefield's executing and spending those public funds violates that Maryland statute. Secondly, we allege that the home rule authority has been exceeded under the Maryland Express Powers Act, which is Maryland Annotated Code, Article 25A. The Maryland home rule authority is limited to that which is expressly or impliedly granted to a county. We allege that the expenditure of public funds advocating in favor of question B violates the Maryland Express Powers Act, in that the county has no authority expressly stated under Maryland law to use public funds to advocate in favor or opposed, in this case in favor of question B of a ballot question. Thirdly, we allege that under Maryland Code Article 24, 13-105, that section prohibits local government employees from engaging in political activities while on the job during working hours. We allege that Mr. Layfield has most certainly engaged in political activities as defined by the Maryland State Prosecutor, a political activity in a letter to Mr. Leggett, she said, would mean promoting in favor of or opposing a ballot question. We allege that Mr. Layfield did in fact engage in political activities on the job and therefore violated Article 24, 13-105. We also allege, fourthly, that under the Montgomery County Personnel Regulation 3.8, county merit system employees may participate in political causes and campaigns, but only on their own time, and it prohibits them from using county equipment, supplies, or other property for a political cause or campaign. It also prohibits county employees from directing, coercing, or otherwise obligating another county employee to contribute to a political cause, and that means time or money. We allege that that Montgomery County personnel regulation has been violated by County Executive Leggett and Mr. Layfield, encouraging and directing or directing county employees, merit employees, to engage in a variety of political activities. When you read our complaint, you will note the specific alleged political activities that Mr. Leggett and Mr. Layfield caused, both expenditure of public funds in violation of Maryland state law and directed county employees to engage in political activities contrary to both state law, the Express Powers Act, and county regulations. We allege specifically that they spent money on a website advocating vote for question B. Second, that they placed advertisements advocating paid advertisements on ride-on buses using county taxpayer funds. Vote for question B. And incidentally, refused the right of the police, Fraternal Order of Police, to pay for and place advertisements on county ride-on buses. That's not part of our case, but that is also a fact that we were denied the right to have at least equal access to paid advertising on ride-on buses until it was very late in the day when Mr. Leggett said he'd create an exception, and it was too late. That wouldn't have occurred until after Election Day. Thirdly, the county paid for and produced and placed bumper stickers asking county employees to do so, advocating vote for question B on county-owned vehicles. We have a report that employees of the Montgomery County Department of Transportation were asked to place such flyers on windshields of cars and to hand out such flyers in what we contend to be a violation of the law. Fourthly, the county executive and Mr. Layfield allowed or instructed the production of and the display of posters and the distribution of handbills advocating a vote for question B at county libraries and other county facilities using public funds. Fifthly, that they advocated support for question B at the Montgomery County Democratic Central Committee meeting using county employees to do so. And sixthly, that they emailed voters to support question B. Seventh, on November 1st, 2012, we were told and have verified that the county hired, using taxpayer funds, individuals paying them $15 per hour to distribute pro-question B handbills exhorting voters to vote for question B at early voting centers and, we are told, at the polls on Election Day. This is in addition to all the volunteers they have in the Democratic Party precinct officials organization. We also are informed that on November 1st, 2012, Mr. Layfield and Mr. Leggett authorized that the Public Information Office produce, pay for, and mail a campaign advertisement promoting county voting for question B to county voters with the addressee, the Office of Public Information, using taxpayer funds. We believe that that mailing was to every county registered voter, or at least most county voters, at substantial cost. We also informed that on November 3rd, 2012, the same County Office of Public Information, under Mr. Mayfield and under Lacefield, and of course under the direction of the county executive, did a second mailing, we believe, to virtually all county voters, exhorting them to vote for question B. So based upon those specific actions by Mr. Lacefield under the direction of the county executive, we allege those four violations of the law, and the remedies that we are seeking is, first, a declaration by the circuit court judge that this is illegal conduct by the county for any or all of those four reasons. Secondly, under case law, under court precedent, we have a right to seek personal remuneration, personal liability by county executive Leggett and by the information officer Lacefield to repay to the county budget all funds that were illegally expended using taxpayer dollars. Officer and Detective Tori Cook, the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, has a few words to add, and then we'll take questions.
Under advisement of our attorneys, we were advised that the spending of taxpayer funds was illegal, especially on the ballot question, question B, in an effort to have voters vote for the question. When government is allowed to spend unlimited funds, these being taxpayer funds, to campaign on a position, in this case for question B, which is a question on the local ballot in Montgomery County, it creates a unfair and non-level playing field for the opposition. As well, police officers and other county employees have taken pay cuts, benefit cuts, and increases to their retirement, all in the effort to help Montgomery County's economy. And now the government spends thousands of dollars to prevent police officers from having a say, taking away 30-year-old law, and we think that's unfair. We also think that it's not fiscally, they're not managing our money in this fiscal economy the way it should be managed, considering that we are still coming out of financial rough times, and now we see that the government has plenty of money to spend against police officers, but back in last November said they didn't have enough money to pay for increments and raises.
All right, I have one final comment before taking questions, and that is, I don't know if there is a precedent anywhere in this country where the police officers that protect the community sue the very government that hires them to protect the community, because the government spent tax dollars to promote on a ballot in an election, in a political activity that the state prosecutor says is a political activity because it advocates a particular position on one side of a ballot question. This may be without precedent where a police officer union sues the very county government that employs the police to protect the community. We certainly are aware of what Governor Scott Walker did in Wisconsin in rolling back collective bargaining rights, but here in Montgomery County, it was far worse. Scott Walker exempted police officers and firefighters from his effort to roll back collective bargaining rights. In this case, Montgomery County not only went after its police officers for one type of collective bargaining rights, although they retain rights to collective bargaining over working conditions, they will, if this is approved, no longer have the right to bargain over the effects of decisions. He not only did not exempt the county council and county executive not only didn't exempt police officers as Governor Walker did, but they spent county government funds to advance their position on a ballot question that is being voted on tomorrow. Governor Walker in Wisconsin never suggested that he could use state Wisconsin funds to advance his position on the legislation as well as on the referendum. So we think there is some truth to say that this is Scott Walker in Montgomery County, but far worse. The irony, of course, being done by Democrats. All right, we're open to questions.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone now. As a reminder, only members that are employed by a news organization are allowed to ask a question. You will be addressed by both name and news organization. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, press star 1. Our first question comes from Victor Sapana from the Washington Post. Victor, your line is now open.
I don't hear him, operator.
Okay, we'll take our next question from Kate Alexander from the Gazette.
Hi, I was wondering how the FOP is being harmed. What is the harm you're actually experiencing here that you want remedy to?
Yes, excellent question. And of course, harm needs to be alleged for there to be a controversy so that a court under the Declaratory Judgment Act can declare what the law is or what the law is not. And that's the suit that's been filed today, is to seek a declaration of what the law is. The harm is at least two that are alleged in the complaint. Harm number one is that the loss of effects bargaining will put the police officers in a disadvantageous position, and that they can only gain collective bargaining rights over the effects of decisions through litigation and through other options that are available to all public employees to engage in effects bargaining. But they will have to do so in a far more expensive arena using litigation if the county police chief and management refuse to bargain over effects, which we would still contend is illegal, but it would require court action rather than the expedited, efficient, and inexpensive method that this 30-year statute provides that might be repealed if question B is approved tomorrow. So the loss of the right under the statute within 50 days to get a decision on effects bargaining, or immediately if it's a public safety issue, there's no delay whatsoever, as I've said before. But the loss of that statute is a harm to the police in that they will not be able to bargain over effects that help their families on daycare, on personal issues, on many other issues that we've explained and which we will have testimony to provide to the court as harm to police officers who will not be able to use this efficient statute to bargain, but rather will have to use litigation to assert their rights to effects bargaining. The second is the very costs that have been incurred by the police union to promote their position on this ballot question, while the county government has overwhelmed in the spending of tax dollars at a time of budgetary pressures, as Detective Cook mentioned. That's a financial harm that we allege is a result of the illegal conduct.
Okay, thank you. We'll take our next question from Victor Sapana from the Washington Post.
Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yes, Victor, we can.
Great. First, there's a broader question, and second is a more technical one. I am not hearing any remedies that would pertain specifically to Election Day tomorrow. Is that intentional? Are you guys trying to get something done before tomorrow? I know it would be a quick turnaround. And, how long do you think this sort of loss is going to take, and why do it so late in the game?
Very good question. We were certainly unaware of the extensive mailing, not one but two, that had gone out countywide with the Office of Public Information on the envelope until Friday. At the time that we've been watching the county government advocate in favor of question B, which is the memo that was issued by the county attorney that is lawful under the First Amendment. We did not believe that we could challenge under the First Amendment the right of government to advocate a position on the ballot. The expenditure of funds that we noticed on ride-on buses, we were unaware that it was more than a de minimis expenditure, so we had to debate whether it was worth going to court to challenge the expenditure of bus advertisements. It wasn't until we realized the overwhelming judgment by County Executive Leggett to authorize the expenditure of, I would guess, over $100,000 or more to make a countywide, openly one-sided, and we would argue distorted presentation, but even if accurate, a one-sided presentation mailed at substantial county expense. So we did, early in the call, I mentioned Victor debate. We did not lightly have a police union sue the county government. We debated whether to do that, and then when we saw the second mailing, and finally the payment of workers with a precinct organization, both Democratic and Republican, already at the polls, which could be used to hand out flyers. We interviewed and have on tape individual young people being paid $15 an hour by county taxpayers to be at the polling places. That was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back after recognizing the substantial expenditure of money in the last several days that led us to file the suit this afternoon. Because it is so late in the day, we did not believe it was wise to try to interrupt an election, especially during a presidential year, nor did we think that that was a viable legal possibility to seek a restraining order or some type of injunctive relief. But we did want the court to declare the conduct of this government as illegal so that in the future county government taxpayer funds can't be used for a political activity as defined by the state prosecutor in his letter to Mr. Leggett. And we also are seeking a remedy of a return of all the money spent under case law precedent. The individual is responsible for authorizing this expenditure, and specifically Mr. Leggett and Mr. Layfield, and there may be others, can be held personally liable. So we decided that that was the best option we had available to us at this late date after we recognized in just the last several days the substantial amount of tax money that has been spent to advocate in favor of question B.
Great. The follow-up questions then, one, do you have a precise amount put in the documents on what substantial would mean? I mean, what kind of money we're talking about? Are we tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, thousands? And secondly, I don't hear it, but I'm wondering if another remedy would potentially be the assuming that, let's say tomorrow didn't go into on your favor and these provisions were stripped away, would a remedy also be to reinstate these provisions that could be stripped away tomorrow?
The answer is we don't know about reversing the results of the election. We did not choose to file that lawsuit, and we are still thinking about whether there is an effective remedy because we believe that the results of the question B balloting have been tainted by illegal conduct. There is a theory of the law called the fruits of the poisonous tree, where if somebody does something illegal, the consequences of that illegal act can be nullified. Under state election law, we have to examine whether that remedy is available to us, and it's still a very difficult decision for us to make because there is a great concern about taking away somebody's ballot because of the illegal conduct of a county government. So we are considering that, but at the moment we decided not to do that. We have not foreclosed the possibility of doing that. We do want a declaration by a court. We hope that the court will agree with our reading of the law, and I must say the state prosecutor's reading of the law, that a political activity in favor of a ballot question is defined as requiring a ballot issues committee, and if the county expended money illegally, we would like that to be a declaration of the law so that at least going forward it will never happen again.
Mm.
but no specific dollar value has been assigned yet. To answer your question, we tried to assess the cost of a mailing to every county voter, if that's where it went. We did our own informal survey. Everybody, including yours truly, received that mailing, mailed and printed in a very expensive quality of brochure, multicolored and multi-page brochure, and we tried to calculate the cost of that mail, and we certainly think if it went to most county households, it would be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the kind of money that has been spent at taxpayer expense, we at least believe there should be political accountability by full disclosure of that number, and we believe that a court of law will find that that's more than a de minimis amount of money, and therefore constitutes an illegal act that should be declared to be illegal in our view as to what Maryland law is. So we think it's at least over $100,000, if not more. Great, thank you. I would add, Justin, one other follow-up to Victor's question is that if the court permits us, we would seek discovery of that information. We also intend to file a Public Information Act request to get the information on how much totally the county has spent, how much time on the job county employees have expended, which is an in-kind expense. We also are informed that county employees who are asked to put flyers under windshields or hand out flyers were merit system employees. We are told just anecdotally, which may not be correct, but individual anecdotes, that they felt pressure and coercion from supervisors to hand out these ballot question brochures and flyers. If that's the case, that's the violation of the law that I cited that does not allow anybody to be coerced or influenced who is a merit system employee. So those are the alleged acts of illegality, and we hope to obtain more facts by putting individuals under the court's supervision and with the court's permission under sworn depositions, which we will ask to be made public so that there's a full, transparent disclosure of all activities by the county government so that the taxpayers of Montgomery, whether they're for or against question B, have a right to know how much money did County Executive Leggett and Mr. Lacefield, and I would add, with the complicity and knowledge of County Council President Berliner and all the County Council members, know about this money being spent. We would like there to be full transparency, and we hope the court agrees that there should be a finding that this spending was illegal. Any other questions?
Thank you. Our next question comes from Kate Ryan with WTOP.
All right. Again, it sounds as though you've been unable to pin down exactly how much the county may have spent. How much is this costing the FOP to prosecute your campaign?
Well, it's not exactly a parallel, but it's nice to have you participating in one of our press conferences, Kate, so thank you for calling in. The difference between privately funded activity and taxpayer-funded activity is the difference, in our view, between what is lawful and what is not lawful. The county FOP has spent money on television ads and on me and on other consultants, probably in excess of $200,000 in hard-earned private contributions from its union members and from other unions, but no tax dollars, no public dollars. I did answer the question, Kate. In fact, I said over $100,000, probably considerably more than that, if these two mailings went to every county household, if the ride-on bus rates were paid, and if all the other printing and other costs, we would say at least several hundred thousand dollars. What I said is I couldn't give you a specific answer because the county has not publicly disclosed those numbers to people in the journalistic profession, much less to the taxpayers. We suspect the county will be, government will be embarrassed to tell taxpayers how much it is spent in promoting a political cause that the state prosecutor calls a political activity requiring registration under state law. We would also remind everyone something that has never been reported, that the county spent $250,000 on legal fees, that is taxpayer money, to prevent voters from having a right to say yes or no on whether this 30-year statute should be repealed. After spending over $250,000 on legal fees, the highest court in the state of Maryland summarily dismissed their complaint against the petition that led to this referendum. Summarily, not even worth a decision, ordering that this ballot question at least be allowed to be voted on by county voters. So as we add up the county dollars spent to overturn this 30-year statute, we have to add in the $250,000 spent to thwart people's right to vote.
Got it. And in terms of the young people who are being paid apparently $15 an hour to go and electioneer,
right.
Do you know at whose direction that was and how many there are?
Yes. Thank you for asking, Kate. The direction of Patrick Layfield is our information and belief. I believe he was quoted as saying that he only hired 8 or 10. We have reason to believe that that is an intentional misstatement and that, in fact, more than 10, we don't know how many, we'll know tomorrow. But we did interview 2 of these individual in this case, 2 young people, put on our website and on YouTube, which will be available for you to see. And they were interviewed and asked, who hired you? They said Montgomery County. Didn't know the specific individual, but we are informed it was Mr. Layfield responsible for these hirings. And they were asked, what were you told to do? And they were told to, we think, misstate the truth about the county police trying to run the police department when the county perfectly well knows that effects bargaining is limited in time to no more than 50 days or else the county management can do anything it wants, and if it's a matter of public safety, they're not delayed 1 second. And yet these young people were told to tell voters that the effects bargaining statute that's been in place for 30 years impedes law enforcement because the county police officers are trying to run the county police department. So that's what we have on tape. And I would say just ironically, when they were asked, well, how do you feel about it? They said, well, we're in favor of letting the county police officers do effects bargaining, even though they're being paid $15 an hour to hand out flyers to say the opposite.
And just to be clear, this does not roll back the right to negotiate a contract. It simply takes away effects bargaining, correct?
Correct. Working conditions are still the subject of a contract, and they're still subject to collective bargaining rights. We say that effects of decisions are also subject to collective bargaining under the contract. But in order to get that to be done, it would require litigation and expensive lawsuits. Under the county statute that's been in place for 30 years, if the county orders a policeman to change his shift so that there are daycare costs that are incurred, and that is a many instance example of effects that can be caused that have monetary and personal burden on police officers. Because of effects bargaining, the contract reflects, because of effects bargaining, that the county police officers should have advance notice of that type of a shift so that they can make provision for daycare. Without effects bargaining, when this collective bargaining agreement expires, they will no longer have a right to have even a discussion. Of course, the police chief doesn't say that he can always say no to any request in effects bargaining and immediately implement whatever he wants to do under the plain language of the statute if he declares the matter to affect significantly of public safety. And even if he doesn't do so, the maximum delay is 50 days, which in 30 years has never been reached, and there has never been an arbitration on the subject in 30 years. Yet the county's paid for by taxpayer mailings misrepresents the truth, and we believe intentionally, by stating that these effects bargaining rights have caused safety delays, which is an intentional misrepresentation.
And just finally, in terms of the number of people, and forgive me, no pun intended here, affected by this, is it only police who are, do you have police members who are not FOP members? For example, you know, like in some shops you have union folks and people who don't become members of the union. How many people does this actually impact?
Well, there's two questions there. One is, does the police FOP represent all police officers? And I don't know the answer to that question. So, Tori, can you tell me, does the union represent all police officers?
The Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 35 represents all sworn police officers, except for those above sergeant. So sergeant and below, we represent sworn police officers, and the union is made up of sworn police officers, volunteers.
Do you have a number on that? I'm sorry, I'm just trying to...
That's okay, Kate. How many police officers would be members of the FOP, Tori? Just a rough guess.
It's more than 1,100.
More than 1,100. And Kate, to answer your other question, another intentional misrepresentation. I say intentional because I only started to use intentional after asking people to read the plain English language, and they still misrepresent what the plain English language says, which is that no effects bargaining process can delay a public safety decision 1 second. 1 second, because the language of the statute that's been in place for 30 years say that significant public safety issues, which is a determination the police chief can make, shall have no delay whatsoever, can be implemented immediately. But the real issue here is the right to talk, the right to collective bargaining. Every police union has the, every union, whether it's Montgomery County's police or at the state AFL-CIO president said at our press conference, as the firefighters chief in Montgomery County said, every union has a right to effects bargaining. The statement made in newspapers and by county officials that only Montgomery County gives police officers effects bargaining is a flat-out falsehood. What should be said is only Montgomery County has a time-limited statute that limits effects bargaining to 50 days or less, a time limit that has never been reached in 30 years, and allows immediate implementation of an effect if it's a matter of public safety. So the statute is unusual, not the right to effects bargaining, which all unions have, and that has been litigated and found that it took 2 years to litigate and lost the case, so that the Montgomery County Public Employees Union vindicated its position that it has the right to effects bargaining. It just took them 2 years and a lot of legal fees, as opposed to the statute, which limits the county police to 50 days or less and immediate implementation if it's a public safety issue. Any other questions?
We have another question from Kate Alexander with the Gazette.
I have a follow-up question for you. You mentioned the $250,000 that was spent previously on legal fees. Would you also try to have the plaintiffs, if the judgment goes in your favor, repay the legal fees that would be spent fighting this?
No, that's not. Thanks for that question, Kate. I'm sorry to say this has to be the last question because of my own personal family schedule. The expenditure of funds to defend or put a lawsuit together where there's a genuine belief that there is a valid lawsuit is an appropriate government function. While we disagreed with the decision to thwart the public voting on a question, which is a decision the county government made to try to prevent this referendum from taking place, we think that's bad policy, and we think it's bad politics to spend $250,000 to prevent people having a say at the ballot box, but we don't think it's illegal. And that's why we didn't add that to our request for relief. We're only adding the money spent to advocate the position on question B that Mr. Leggett and Mr. Layfield are responsible for, and we may find others are responsible for. We ask them to be personally liable for that expenditure under the law.
So none of the court case expenditures, just to be clear.
No, that is not an illegal, we think it's an unwise judgment to thwart the public from having the right to vote on this question, which is what they tried to do, but we don't think it's illegal. Thank you very much, everybody, and apologies for the last-minute nature, and especially grateful for the very excellent questions that you've asked us. Thank you all.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect now.